It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine now the potential for diverting water from the Great Lakes to places out west contending with a years-long drought and what this means for the Great Lakes Compact that's led by the governors of 8 states, including Wisconsin. Under federal law enacted 14 years ago, they protect and manage the Great Lakes Basin for future generations. Join in with questions on Great Lakes water becoming a commodity. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Joel Brummeyer is president of the Chicago-based nonpartisan advocacy group Alliance for the Great Lakes. Joel, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So there is this growing speculation that water from the Great Lakes could be a possible source of fresh water for out west, drought-stricken west. How realistic is this? Is it plausible?
Well, I don't think it's realistic, and here's why. One, as you mentioned in the intro, we have this policy called the Great Lakes Compact, which bans most diversions of water from the Great Lakes. So on the legal side, we can dig more into that. Then there's the political side of things. Historically, Great Lakes water supply has been what we would call a political third rail. It's just one of those things you don't mess with because the states guard their water rights so zealously. And so you'd have to have sort of a legal upset, a political upset. And then the third thing is the economics of it all, what it would take to actually transport water over this great distance and great elevation change, extremely expensive. And so it's hard for me to see a future where the biggest risk to the Great Lakes water supply is are our exports out west.
Well, regardless of the legality, the political dynamics and the economics of this, do you know what groups or state governments are trying to push this ahead and gain traction?
I think it's really important when we hear about these questions about, out west, hey, we're running out of water. But, as former presidential candidate Bill Richardson said, the Wisconsin is awash in water, right? And got into a lot of trouble for that statement. When we hear those, it's really important to look into what's going on out west, right? So you've got the impacts of drought exacerbated by climate change. You've also got a major user, agriculture, which is the biggest user of the Western water supply. And so I think when I hear this question about moving water across the country, I think about, man, what's it going to take to actually, for those states to actually use their water supplies more efficiently? And it also, I think, for Midwesterners and Great Lakers should raise questions about what if businesses and agriculture starts to come here and look for growth based on that access to easy fresh water supplies, right? Those are the kinds of things that come to my mind when I hear these comments about potentially moving Great Lakes water out west.
And we hear that sentiment echoed elsewhere, that the drought in the West is not the Midwest's problem to fix. This is a region that's known about this problem for decades, hasn't scaled back its water usage. You mentioned large-scale farming, big cities. How do you feel about that attitude?
I think that it's possible for regions, states, watersheds, regions to manage their water sustainably, right? And it's been demonstrated in parts of the American West. It's been demonstrated here in the Midwest that if you think like a watershed, you think like the place you're in, and you really pay attention to where water falls, using it efficiently. And even in ag, I'll acknowledge that in Western agriculture, the water consumption relative to production of crops has gone down over the years because farmers are becoming more efficient about irrigation. I do think we're coming to this point where you have to say, is it sustainable to grow X crop in this place? Or is that going to have to change? You have to grow something differently or move that where that crop is grown, because it's just not sustainable to grow, whatever it is. People talk about almonds or cattle or whatever it is in a particular place. I think those days are coming, and there is going to be a reckoning around that. It's going to have economic, consequences for states that have been really relying on these dwindling water supplies. I think that, though, it's important that states and regions grapple with those based on the water supplies that are in the place that they're in, just like the Great Lakes states are grappling with how to manage this incredible, globally significant water resource that we have in our backyards.
Joel Brumeyer, president of the Chicago-based nonpartisan advocacy group Alliance for the Great Lakes, as we look at potential threats to divert water from the Great Lakes and what protections are in place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us from Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm concerned that if we start burning up our own water resources here and shipping that off, A, who's making the profit off of shipping the water out of here? I don't think it'll be the Great Lakes residents that'll profiteering off of that. And then oncoming droughts, what's that going to do to our own water levels here, you know, around the states? They chose to live down there. They chose to waste the resources.
Oh, Tim, you broke up there, but you also raised, you know, water as a commodity, the commodification of water. Joel, go ahead and respond.
Yeah. Tim raised a really, I think, an important point about the cost of water and where the money goes. So this is something that the state of Michigan has been grappling with, other states have been grappling with in the form of things like food production and especially bottled water production. So we have, you know, as Tim noted, we have this incredible resource here. One of the reasons some people choose to live here is because of this you know, access to water, which is great. The Great Lakes states haven't necessarily been great about realizing the full value of water. One of the big challenges in Michigan, and it was with water bottling, has been this argument about why is it so cheap for companies to bottle water and then sell it, right? The permits to access that water are very inexpensive, and you know the state doesn't, and the people of the state don't realize a lot of economic benefit from it. So there's a big argument about whether that kind of commodification is appropriate, and if it is, then can the state's residents actually get more of a benefit because and raise the cost of that of those water withdrawal permits? So they're actually paying the true cost and getting the true value of this, again, this incredible resource when companies are using it to manufacture products.
Let's dig further on withdrawals from the Great Lakes. We saw in 2016, Waukesha here was given approval to divert millions of gallons of water a day from Lake Michigan for drinking water. Why does Waukesha need this water?
Yeah, again, back to the call, this is good for the caller's point as well about water levels. So Waukesha is the first and only community in the Great Lakes region that has been permitted to divert water outside of the Great Lakes watershed. So a watershed is this place where all the rain falls and it drains into the Great Lakes. Waukesha's outside of that line. It got a permit to divert water and use it. And the important part of that is that it has to actually return the water to the Great Lakes after it's used. So there's no net loss of water, which is a really important part of the compact. Waukesha applied for that permit because it was drawing down its groundwater supply. And in Waukesha was and is a growing suburb of Milwaukee. It needed more water, and it was actually having less access to its groundwater because it was getting contaminated by radium and other chemicals. So as groundwater gets drawn down, it naturally has chemicals, some of which are toxic, get more and more concentrated in that groundwater. So Waukesha went looking for a new water supply. It was under an EPA order to do so. And it settled on applying for Lake Michigan water, which is a very arduous, expensive, and long-term process. And there was a lot of oversight into that application. So that's why Waukesha was searching for a new water supply.
Can you explain the returning of water here in this plan and the returning of wastewater to the Root River?
Right. So water is, and this is why, you know, we think about water not just from what comes out of your tap, not just from what comes out of, you know, what goes into the sewer. It's the whole system, the whole cycle. Waukesha buys water and gets it to its residents, and then the residents use it, and then it has to treat that sewage and return it to Lake Michigan. And so that water gets returned through Racine, through the Root River, after it's been treated as sewage coming out of the municipality of Waukesha. And so this is the same cycle that every community has to run its water through. We all do this every day here in the Great Lakes. You drink the water, you use it, and then it goes back into the sewer system. It gets treated and goes back out into the natural environment. the thing with Waukesha is because it's a very long distance, they pay more to move it that far. So to move their sewage and their treated sewage back out to Lake Michigan costs Waukesha more, for example, than it does Milwaukee because of the distance in part. And so Waukesha has to pay higher rates for this access to Lake Michigan water, which it's chosen to do as a trade-off for getting that diversion and getting that, you know, effectively a guarantee of this really incredible, you know, clean water supply.
Joel Bremeyer leads the nonprofit group Alliance for the Great Lakes, working to protect this natural resource. Join in on what you think about proposals to divert Great Lakes Basin water, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Great Lakes hold an estimated 6 quadrillion gallons of water. We discuss the pressure for water diversion as the West struggles with a years-long drought and how the Great Lakes Compact may respond. Call in about the commodification of water, how to ensure sustainability, purity, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Joel Bremeyer, who is president of Alliance for the Great Lakes. Joel, we heard from Jim in Cedarburg, and Jim wants to know if water that is being returned to Lake Michigan after being borrowed from cities like Waukesha, will it be tested for toxins like radon or PFAS before it goes back into Lake Michigan?
So water that's treated in a sewage treatment plant and then gets discharged back into Lake Michigan has to meet water quality standards of the state and federal government. So, you know, that in Wisconsin, it's Wisconsin DNR. I don't know. I know that this is in discussion right now if there is a discharge standard for PFAS, but that's being discussed right now. It's an active area of negotiation within US EPA for drinking water standards, not for sewage discharge. But that water does have to meet all of the applicable state of Wisconsin water quality standards, just like any other city would. And this is a really important point of the compact, is part of the deal when a community gets approved for a diversion like Waukesha has, is that it has to cause no individual or cumulative what are called adverse impacts to the water quality of the Great Lakes Basin, the Great Lakes watershed. So there's this extra protection in there that makes it, that gives the states an opportunity to go back and say, if a community like Waukesha is causing an environmental problem, to go back and demand accountability from Waukesha and the state of Wisconsin. So there's that extra layer of water quality protection built into the compact, which is another good thing about that policy.
I want to look further into the Great Lakes Compact and framing it here with the approval some years ago now of Foxconn being able to divert 7 million gallons of water a day from Lake Michigan. Environmental groups claiming back in 2018 this had violated the Great Lakes Compact. Has that compact been weakened by that decision?
I don't think that it has. This, and I think this is a really important example when we talk about, when we think about this question of Western states looking for water to support businesses versus businesses, you know, coming to the Great Lakes and accessing our water supplies. Really tricky question. Foxconn was allowed to access water from Racine's public water supply system, which had enough capacity. To allow at the time the facility that people thought was going to get built, to allow Foxconn to access that water for manufacturing. And there was a big debate on whether that use was qualified under the language of the compact. You know, some groups, as you noted, some folks felt that it didn't, others felt that it did. And I think that, you know, I don't see the Foxconn permit for water use as being a weakening of the compact. You know, like a lot of laws, the compact was written in a way that allows some interpretation later on, which, you know, we've been very heavily involved in. And the, you know, the Great Lakes region is full of these big municipal water systems, a lot of which have what are excess capacity, right? So Racine has a lot of water that it's permitted to use that it's not using. And it's, you know, candidly, it, like many other cities, is looking for customers to sell that water to, right? And that's what happened. That's what happened with Foxconn. I think that, you know, that situation is going to be repeated across the Great Lakes region. And it's, so it's important to recognize that we have a lot of water. We have a lot of cities and water users that have excess capacity, you know, to withdraw water and use it and sell it to new users. And I think that pressure on the Great Lakes themselves here at home is probably more immediate of a concern than, you know, potential exports to other parts of the country or other parts of the world. You know, we have a lot of cities looking to sell water here and in a way that's legal. And that's going to increase, I think, over time, the amount of water that's actually being used from the Great Lakes. You know, qualifying that again, all that water ultimately does have to be returned to the Great Lakes after it's used.
So what I'm hearing is that you do expect more municipalities around the lakes to seek permission to divert water for various reasons.
Oh yeah, certainly. I think more municipalities seeking ways to sell more water, both within the watershed and in diversions that would need to be approved by the states, right? So the Southeast Wisconsin, Northwest Indiana are two areas, and leaving Illinois out because Illinois has a whole special exception to all this because of the diversion through the Chicago River. But that area of Southeast Wisconsin and Northwest Indiana is very, the watershed boundary that limits where water can go is very close to Lake Michigan. And there's a lot of growth in those areas. So there's going to be more and more pressure for communities like Waukesha to look for new water supplies. I think that's definitely coming. You're going to see the same thing in the coming decades in Northern Ohio, where you have a similar kind of geography. So I think that pressure is real and it's going to be very prominent in the rest of the 21st century.
Talking about the Great Lakes Compact, Joel Bremeyer with us, president of Alliance for the Great Lakes. You can call in at 800-642-1234. Do you find that the governors of the eight states in the compact are on the same page about these challenges that they are being confronted with?
Well, the governors historically are on the same page in blocking diversions. And even when there's a diversion that is applied for legally, like Waukesha, there's some governors were not initially on board with approving that diversion, and Waukesha's water use actually got cut way, their proposed water use got cut way back during that process. But generally the governors are on the same page about saying no to diversions, certainly anything outside of what's contemplated in the compact. So there's a unified front there. I think when it comes to water use within the Great Lakes region, within the Great Lakes states, it's a different story. Governors have very different interpretations of water use policy. One of the things about the compact that gets talked about a lot less is that it doesn't just ban diversions, but it requires the states to have kind of the same legal floor of permits for water uses within the state, within the Great Lakes Basin. But the way that, say, Ohio interprets that versus Michigan versus Wisconsin is pretty different. And so it's good that that legal floor is there. But I think a lot of the, when we talk about strengthening the compact,
yes,
a lot of the action is really at the state level. It's really going into those state water withdrawal permit programs that are pretty new, and in some cases haven't been tested as much as you know we would like, and really pushing for additional protections, you know, in some cases additional restrictions where it's appropriate on water use, and making sure that as one of the callers said earlier, that the people of the state are when water is being used, that it's being, you know, especially by some of these large commercial users, that it's being paid for, and that the people of the state are benefiting from those uses. All that action, right, is at the state level. It lies with the governors and the state legislatures. I think that's really important for making sure the Great Lakes are protected, you know, for the next 100 years.
And we only have a few moments left here, but how could the compact be improved? Michigan, I understand, has made a lot of strides.
Yeah, well, Michigan, I like the Michigan example because it has this, it actually has a science-based tool that's used to assess whether groundwater and surface water is connected. And so when this water gets withdrawn, it has impacts on the surface. Michigan looks at that connection and uses it to determine whether a new water use can be permitted. That's a great kind of ecologically based test.
Science-based approach.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So those kinds of tools are out there. And I think the more we push to make those kinds of improvements and other kinds of improvements like we've talked about, that's what's going to be make sure that the Great Lakes water supply is here for today and for generations to come.
Joel, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Joel Brummeyer is president of the Chicago-based Alliance for the Great Lakes. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.